Hi, I'm John.
Hi, I'm Olivia.
And I'm Rachel.
And this week we've watched Civil Defense, and now we're going to argue about whether it's going to make us quit.
I have so many conflicting feelings about this episode. For once I don't have like any cause to admonish anyone out the gate. I'm so conflicted. We'll see how it goes.
It's an interesting choice, Rachel, because it's one that people do consider a classic, but I kind of get why you chose it.
Yeah, I mean, it's easily one of my favorite episodes, and it's one of my favorite types of episodes. I love the type of episode where everybody is all working together on a problem, versus like it's an episode about Tripp's nipples or whatever. So like in theory, like it checks all the boxes, but there are so many gaping plot holes, so much suspension of disbelief that it makes at the end of it, you really have to question whether or not you're going to continue watching Star Trek.
It's like, oh, this is really fun. And then it ends and you're like, oh, wait.
How exactly was this solved or resolved?
Yeah, even just like this idea that the Cardassians would program this complicated system with a whole bunch of what ifs. Like, what if they end up disabling life support? I know, we'll have this like second layer of the program. What if Dukat tries to beam off? I know.
Truly a choose your own adventure game.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of questions. I mean, I hope this wasn't how you started Star Trek, because it would have been like, hang on a second.
Yeah, it definitely was not my very, very first episode of Star Trek, but.
Where did you start then?
I don't have like a very clear memory of like, oh, this was the first one. But I think it must have been that my mom would watch The Next Generation while it was live. I am that old. It was on while I was alive. And it wasn't when Deep Space Nine came out, I started watching that independently and I was totally in love. So it was really Deep Space Nine in the 90s that got me into.
I think this would have been a good one to introduce someone to Star Trek, or at least even to Deep Space Nine with. You get a little shot of everyone together.
Yeah, and you get to hear a bit of like the Cardassian backstory, the occupation backstory. Yeah.
Did you have a quit moment then? Was there an episode then when you were watching TNG with your mom or DS9 where you were just like, all right, what the hell is this?
It wasn't TNG or DS9 that made me quit. It was end of Voyager, like season 7 of Voyager, and getting into Enterprise. And I think maybe it was just also my age. You know, I was coming into being an adult, and so maybe I was sort of leaving that part of my childhood behind. So I kind of dropped off. I think I watched maybe the first season of Enterprise and then dropped off shortly after that.
Yeah, that's not a season that encourages you to watch more Star Trek.
Not really, no. I mean, I did recently do a rewatch of Enterprise and it is great. Like I did like I almost rewatched it going like, oh, I kind of wish I watched this live. But no, it definitely.
Sorry, John. Were you insulting Enterprise when you just declared your allegiance to Faith of the Heart?
Listen,
Faith of the Heart cult.
I think it is incredibly clear over the last week that I am not allowed to have any opinions on Star Trek music. I'm just not.
Why aren't you allowed to have public an opinion? Safety. Is it because they're always wrong?
I basically said that I thought the DS9 scene was a bit plodding and that I'd be dunked on for a week.
Those French horns, though, they get the heart of fluttering. I'm like sweating. It's magical. How could
it's out of time with itself. Like the drums are out of time with the rest of it. That's not even like, listen to it. It's out of time with itself. I don't think it's bad. I just think it goes on for too long, and the drums are out of time with the rest of the music.
Okay.
These things are important. Anyway, you know, I'm not gonna
how did he just defend himself? I need to have a rebuttal. Sorry.
that the drums are out of time. This is the main.
Drums are out of time, but not in a cool jazzy way.
You know what? Maybe that's a reflection of our beautiful, dysfunctional family. Maybe you can't appreciate the nuances of the DS9 theme. You know what hurt me? You compared it to the Faith of the Heart theme, and like, that's just...
Yeah, that's apples and oranges. They're totally different.
We will save this fight for another day, I think.
Oh my gosh, he absolutely prefers the Enterprise theme to the DS9 theme.
Civil defense!
Civil defense.
It has this strange sort of Jake Sisko does work experience on an industrial estate opening. He's like, listen here, son, you're going to go work down on that. You're going to go work down pit for a day. And it's just like, okay, dad.
He's just
with O'Brien fixing computers.
I remember Jake's backstory. Like, at this point, why was he helping out? Was he just, you know...
Yeah, he was kind of not training to go to Starfleet, but he was sort of doing a little bit of the exploring as to what department would I be kind of interested in. Mm. So he had been working with O'Brien on other things as well. And so this was just a day of, not like apprenticing, but like bring your kid to work day kind of. Like he was sort of going around to the different departments, seeing where he might fit.
A slightly more welcome than Wesley, though.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, big time, right?
Oh dear.
Like night and day difference.
Oh god.
Although not to get too off topic, but I'm still shocked to this day that Wesley was allowed on the bridge like so fast and early. Also made no sense.
I mean, it's Star Trek. It doesn't have to make sense, you know.
Those familial connections.
It's all the old boys club.
Right. It's who you know.
They're working on this station and it's like, this file is unmarked. Let's delete it. Nothing will go wrong then. And it's, we get Dukat on a computer and, you know, we all know the line. And at some point we will all say the line, but we just have Dukat on a computer. And it's kind of like, why is he here?
Well, they're promptly told that they have 5 seconds to enter a code that is related to the Cardassian system, the previous occupiers. And there's not really any clear route out of this.
Cardassians are shitty landlords.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, we changed the locks, but we're not going to tell you how we did that, but we still want the rent.
Yeah. And if you don't give it to us, we're going to shut everything off.
Jesus.
And explode you.
So, yeah, they're stuck in this orbit, and Quark obviously goes and harasses Odo about it, because Quark's got nothing better to do but flirt all day. I mean, it starts off very slow in this episode. Like, Act 1 basically consists of them pissing about in this ore mine until they get nerve gassed.
Right.
It's like, I don't think have they said what the gas is?
They say like a netrocine or something like that.
Like, are we meant to know what that is?
I don't know. Is it a real thing?
Look up? I don't think it is a real thing, but it's kind of like, you'd have expected Sisko to be like, if we stay in here, we'll die. But no, it's just kind of like, I guess we better leave. Like, we only find out that the nerve, it's like nerve gas, like 2 acts later when they're going to nerve gas the habitat ring.
Right.
But at this point, it could just be knockout gas or something.
I thought yeah, they were just it being seem... quietly calm, like just, you know, making sure no one panics. But yes, we are about to die. Death is imminent.
We are all going to
That's
die.
That's his energy. That's his calm.
Well, it is a very like slow acting dense gas, because even when they pump it in, it's like all on their feet. So it's denser than air, I suppose, because it's being pushed down to the bottom. And it doesn't seem to burn their skin or anything, because they're not like, it's around their ankles and they're not like, my legs are melting. They just sort of kind of calmly climb up whatever that big box thing was that very conveniently had a ladder-like structure attached to the outside as part of the design.
I'm just trying to think about the Cardassian engineer who was like, who was designing the Terraconal station that was like, you know, I've got to make sure there's someone to pump the nerve gas in.
Yeah.
You know, we've got to make sure that in any circumstance we can pump nerve gas into the entire station.
It's such strong Hunger Games vibes to me. It feels like it was a game. Like, are we sure Ducat didn't just put this in like towards the end of the occupation so he had an excuse to visit?
That feels like the kind of thing you'd
that's
do.
A good conspiracy. I like that theory.
You know,
I think you're onto something.
All goes down to Kira, getting Kira. Yeah.
We'll get to that when we get to that. So, the trio escape from their nerve gas room, and then everyone in Opsa, the Ducat does, he goes full attention Bajoran workers, and it's like, you know, there's a revolt, so you can't leave Ops now.
And it's, you missed the favorite part, though. My favorite part of when they're escaping the gas, though, is the audio on Jake's like comm system. Like, it sounds like a cutscene in a game. You know, like it's part of Halo or something, like,
Dad, I'm in the container now.
You know, like, it's just so
terrible. Sirik Lawson's just on the other side of the wall saying the line. Like, are you sure we should record this in the studio? No, no, just stand over there and put your hands over your mouth.
I feel like I want to hear each of our impressions of the Bajoran workers. Your attention, please. Who can be the best Ducat?
Well, first you got to get the angle because he's kind of on the side.
He's like side on. I should point out, because this is an audio format, we have all just slid slightly in our chairs to stand side on.
Just sort of like...
A really good profile shot.
You know, what's our best Dippy Heidrich impression? Okay, hold on. Wait.
Is that
attention, Bajoran workers?
No, is it Bajoran workers? Your attention, please.
It's both. I like how he gets more irritated each step down.
Yeah.
But because he must have all pre-recorded these at the same time, right? Does that mean that, like, he did those last? Or did he deliberately get more irritated as time gets on to emphasize his point?
I think he was getting more irritated having to record all of these speculative videos, which may never see the light of day, that he was actually in real time getting more and more annoyed.
Is this a government program? So, like, did he get a memorandum through for Cardassia Prime being like, here's a folder, record all these lines? Or did he make it himself? Was he like up at night being like, I know what I'm gonna do with this?
I feel like this has gotta be his pet project. This is too like narcissistic. He loves the sound of his own voice. He was having a great time. This was like his acting moment.
Okay, yeah, so Gold Account. What's this program for?
He was shut down later by like somebody higher up than him. So it must have come from somebody higher up.
But I'm still imagining he just like wackiest knives. It's like, Golden Cat, what is this program for? Well, it's for if the Bajorans decide to put poison in our food that makes us all laugh uncontrollably so we can't do anything. And thus to counter that, we will flood the entire promenade with various forms of laughing gas so that we'll be on equal playing fields. What? Well, we don't have to use the laughing gas. It's one of the options. So how are you going to do it? Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to make recordings, then put myself on laughing gas to emphasize the effect.
Oh, gosh. Like, who's the think tank behind all this?
There's a lot of Cardassian consultants made a lot of money on this.
Yeah, there's some giant Cardassian tech company that's like, yeah, are you worried about a revolt and your occupation? Hire us and we'll create this elaborate program of these little traps that trigger on different scenarios. We've got all scenarios covered.
Let's imagine how we'd use the nerve gas.
Yeah. Actual conversations about like, and what's the maintenance fee on that gas? Like, is it like an annual checkup that we need to do here? Like, tell us a bit about that.
Is it perishable? Will we need new nerve gas after 5 years?
Will it still be effective? Do we have to top up by then?
Also, why didn't the Cardassians take their nerve gas with them?
That's actually a good question. Valuable. This guy knew. I'm convinced this guy knew it was coming up at some point.
Now that you say that, I think that's the thread that ties it all together, that it was actually a conspiracy, and he set this all up knowing that they were going to leave and that they wanted to booby trap the place.
That he just got a notification to come back? No way.
But also, can we just consider that somehow after 3 years in the station, no point in Miles O'Brien looks at the life support system and go, why is there a label for nerve gas on this diagram? Why are there nerve gas vats on deck 4?
He's a busy man.
Yeah, but surely he'd have noted, surely at some point someone would have gone, sir, what do we do with the nerve gas? And he'd just be like, what?
What
nerve gas? We have nerve gas? Why do we have nerve gas? Oh. You can just like see something labeled nerve gas, like, I'll deal with this another day.
Yeah, I don't have time for this shit.
How did no one notice there was a nerve gas on the station? That had to be kept somewhere. This is angry. I'm angry now about the nerve gas.
Exactly, right? Now you see why.
Someone didn't do their due diligence. It's quite concerning.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're trying. I mean, it's a great bit, my favorite bit, where they're like, we can't get out of ops. And Kira just pulls out a phaser and goes, right, we're doing it this way then.
Yeah, classic. Perfect.
This is when Kira's like at her most fiery. She has no time for anything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's increasingly like the levels of, I mean, it's threatening some extra genocide in his attempts to get the potential Bajoran workers to surrender.
And then he zaps Jadzia's hand. So as I've written here, zapped Zia.
Poor Jadzia is burnt. Yeah. Is it by the force field she's burnt?
Yeah. She's working on the computer and it zaps her.
Yeah, there's an annoying amount of force fields around. And then the threat is just that Takat's threat is just that there'll be stronger measures, which already it's been escalating for a bit now. And I'm just...
Now he's going to nerve gas the women and the children too.
But then the beautiful, beautiful moment of this episode, the reason why I could never fully hate it, Garak arrives. Yeah. Anytime I see his face, I just feel better.
He looks so pleased about it as well. He's like, you're going to die in 2 hours. He looks so pleased with himself.
He knows that the situation is under control because he's there. And because he's Cardassian, essentially, he can bypass the force fields. He has a code, but it doesn't give him all of the controls because Takat didn't trust him, which I don't know why anyone wouldn't trust him. He's a good man.
I mean, it's kind of implied that Garak had Takat's dad killed.
Yeah, I love that, eh? There's
that's kind of funny, yeah.
He probably apologized. Get over it, Takat.
So, yeah, Garak tries now, but then he ends up summoning the Death Phaser Ball. Which is hilarious. I don't know why, but the Death Phaser Ball always amuses me. Because it's just like, it's like a slow cooker that vaporizes people.
It's just randomly shooting people, but yet somehow targeting non-Cardassians, but sort of also just really randomly like shooting out phasers. Yeah. And somebody dies so unceremoniously.
He just gets yeeted in the back.
Poor guy.
And it doesn't even get a mention. Like, too bad about Bob, eh? Like, oh yeah.
He was from accounting. No one cares.
I hadn't even noticed him until he died. It was like,
yeah, I know. Oh, I mean, either. Where even was he? I think he was wearing red too, just as like,
better.
Just for the joke. Red shirt.
So they're being harassed by the Death Phaser Ball, and then it gets worse because then Takat beams in. And it's the most sly, you know, what's his name? Mark Alamo is, you know, if you've watched the Deep Space Nine What We Left Behind documentary, you'll find that he is personally a bit cursed.
Yeah.
But he is very good in this, you know, just oozing slime across the set.
Every high is followed by a low. We get Garak, we get Takat.
Yeah, you can't have like all sunshine Cardassians. They have to throw in a bad apple.
And he's so annoyingly confident because he's like, I'm here to save you. Well, he's there to blackmail them, essentially. He's the only one who can disable everything, apparently. But that doesn't quite work out.
No, we have the bit of Garak Dukat banter as well, which is quite funny.
with the knowledge from the, what is it, the YouTube channel they have? Sin City.
Yeah.
That, it's from that, one of those scripts that Ducat and Garrick were together, intimately, listeners.
No way,
so if you're not aware, there's this, gosh, I'm forgetting his name, Alexander Siddig has a YouTube channel, and sometimes they perform fan scripts and things like that, and sometimes he's joined by Garrick, I'm forgetting his name,
Andrew Robinson.
Yeah.
And there is a story in which Ducat and Garrick were previously intimate. Let's all dwell on that for a second. Let's
I do not canonize that. I would like that not to be canon.
But think about how that influenced their actions that day.
Anyway.
I don't get it. Why would Garrick ever want to...
Garrick has taste. ...with
Ducat? Yeah,
Garrick has taste. It's so upsetting to me.
Unless it was very early, like they were very young.
I can't remember the context now. Were they like trapped somewhere? John's upset. John's so upset.
You know, if you know why Garrick and Ducat fucked, don't tell us. Don't.
Just don't. The day I found out, I think I just blocked it out and I never really fully ever...
If you blocked it out, why did you just mention it?
Because I think I need everyone else to suffer with me. So anyway, moving on from that happy news...
I can never move on from that.
Yeah, we can't move on. You can't just breathe
it's
on
just the
from
bickering, the
Nippy Hydrick and Garrick bickering. Fucked.
The constant bickering might have been indicative of something. Like maybe it happened the week before.
You know, just because two people hate each other doesn't mean they fucked.
You know,
I hate Thatcher. Thought... That doesn't mean we fuck.
Jesus.
All right, that's what this is like, Olivia. Just because they hate each other doesn't mean
I don't want it to be true. I'm just informing the people. The people deserve to know.
The people do not deserve to know. The people deserve blissful ignorance.
Yeah, I would like to go on living my life knowing Garrick and Ducat never has sex.
But now we can't. Now we can't.
Anyway,
I don't apologize.
It's the end of that. Where even were we? Oh yeah,
Death phase of Ducat tries to blackmail Kira into letting the Cardassians back up the station.
They were putting on a garrison, which I have yet to figure out how many people that is. If that's two people or
I mean a garrison 100? Implies like anywhere from like 20 to like 2,000. Either way, it just wasn't going to end well because the moment everything's back to normal and there are 100 odd Cardassians at the station, Starfleet turns up with a couple of battleships and it's like, we'd like you to leave, please.
Yeah. Well, he said that, you know, once my men are here, it'll be hard to get them to leave. Which I don't believe.
It feels like Starfleet might go air, but then Sisko would, like, I don't know, flush them out an airlock or something.
Yeah, they wouldn't go down without a fight. They'd threaten to kill a lot of citizens with the anesthetine gas they've got stashed on the station.
The nerve gas that no one had noticed.
Yeah.
Like, is it that hard to hide, is it that easy to hide nerve gas?
Enough nerve gas to kill the entire station, too. Like, this is a big...
Yeah.
This is a big, I want to say building, but it's not a building.
Station. If you have ever hidden enough nerve gas to kill 2,000 to 7,000 people, please drop us a message at quickstartrekpod@gmail.com and tell us how you hid enough nerve gas to kill 2,000 to 7,000 people.
You're putting us in direct contact with war criminals.
Of course
it had to be this way. This is what Deep Space Nine and Star Trek does. Soon you'll be conversing with war criminals.
Oh, God. So, yeah, Kira, as a badass, is like, you know, I'm not... You can't... Fuck you, Ducat, basically.
I mean, which the offer's not appealing.
Yeah. So Ducat's like, fine, I'll come back when you've got 10 minutes to live. And then Ducat's boss is like, no, you fucking don't. And isn't this great? I love this bit.
I just don't like, in that exchange of Kira, he refers to you're going to let everyone die because of us? What us? What us? There is no you. There is us.
Well, I think that he sort of goes because of us. I think he wants to say me, but he knows that Kira's talking about the Cardassians in general.
Yeah.
I feel like this is just him implying that he wants this couple thing to happen, which is never going to happen.
It's no. Despite the writers, it's not happening.
Yeah, despite the writers and producers, it did not happen. But anyway, just to me.
And then it's quite funny watching Ducat sort of stand in horror while his boss basically goes, you know, we never liked you, Ducat, so you're going to die on this station.
Yeah, that would have been hugely embarrassing for him in front of like these people who he wants to seem so high and mighty around.
Can we imagine how funny it would be if it'd been like in an actual like Bajoran workers rebellion and there's all these Cardassians running around and he sort of goes into a corner and tries to beam off. And all these computers are like, Golda Cat, you are leaving. And like all of his underlings are just sort of look up at him as he's like standing on the transporter pad.
Awkward moment. I mean, the video as well is also unnecessarily like emotive. It's like, you're a coward. You're trying to abandon your post. Why are like the Cardassians this way? Why are they the way that they are?
I think it's one of the takes about the Cardassians that I'm increasingly like drum beating of, which I think Una McCormack follows, is that Cardassian society is in deep, deep decline and obsessed with the military and honor to such an extent that the concept of like not dying for your country is anathema.
Yeah.
But this is also made worse by the fact that Ducat is also a coward. So he doesn't really believe any of the sort of dying for your country shit.
Yeah, Ducat's always out for himself, right?
Yeah.
He believes in the illusion of it.
This is a man who turned around to Wei Yun and was like, why are there no statues of me on Bajon? Even the Wei Yun was like, of course there are no fucking statues of you on Bajon.
Oh, this guy.
He's just so deeply narcissistic that even though he comes from a society that is nationalistic and xenophobic and fascist, etc., he's bought into that idea, but I think he's applied it all to himself versus Cardassia. You know,
Glory
so it's all about him. Like, so he's taken on all the ideals, but he's applied them to the wrong thing. To the wrong totem or the wrong idol.
He is a very good study of Nazis. Okay, hear me out. Which is that people, you know, there's the idea of the jackbooted Nazi as a sort of Prussian officer, but more or less, you know, we have very much in common, Herr X. They're more like Ducat, is that it's all just a lie to them. They are all in it for themselves. They don't care about other people. They don't care about the consequences of their actions. You know, they don't plan ahead, you know. Ducat doesn't think, how will my service for the state now help me in 6 years? He's thinking about the day afterwards.
Right.
You mean he's not thinking that far out? He's only
not thinking far ahead. Because if he had perhaps saved the station without demanding something of Kira, they know the Bajorans would owe him. Because he'd saved the station. But because he's a dick, he's only thinking about the next step.
Right. So he's not really playing the long game.
No.
And I think too, though, that's maybe some of the reasons why Garrick never married Ducat after they coupled.
I was like, where is this going?
Because
John has turned away from the camera. I think he's crying. I think he's crying.
Okay. I'm okay. There's no alcohol in the room. I'm fine.
But fundamentally, Garrick's a long-term thinker. And I think Ducat is very reactive and explosive. So like to your point, you're right. He's not thinking about 5 years from now. He's thinking about what am I going to get in the moment? Because he's kind of almost like blinded by his own ambitions.
I mean, we get that in Act 4 because we have this bit where Ducat is basically flirting by mansplaining, you know. I have not met people. I have been behind bars and serving people and watched somebody do that. So they weren't talking about nerve gas, they were talking about cocktails. And it's just like, I mean, the last one I can remember but in the before times was somebody doing it, and the two thoughts going through my head were, one, you don't know anything about cocktails, two, she's gay. Which is so exactly what this her. Is.
Yes. Do cats mansplaining flirting technique. Now, I don't remember the sort of beginning of his affections, obsession with Kira.
This is it, by the way. This is where it starts.
This is the beginning.
Yes.
So this is like his part one of the plan, because it's so ineffective. I don't know if it's a stupidity or if it's just the beginning. I like that Garrick berates him. That's the best part of it for me. I respect him even more than I thought I could. It's just like, she doesn't want to be with you, a married man. Like,
but do you think now, knowing what you know about their past relationship, do you think he was more jealous?
Stop bringing it up.
We can't edit it out now. It can't be edited out.
I'm editing this week. I will try.
Okay, wait. So, knowing their past relationship. There has to be no love there. What have I done?
It's so cursed, because like he starts lecturing and Kira's like, what's going on? And Garrick sort of looks at him and goes, cut the bullshit screen.
Like, this isn't gonna work. She's too smart for you. She's out of your league in every single way. Everything about her is and, also, you murdered, you tried to genocide her people. So she
I do like that he finishes
about that.
I don't like that the last thing he finishes with is, by the way, you're married. And when he says that, everybody looks at Ducat like, wait, you're married? I don't think it's actually come up before.
Yeah, no,
that
I don't
Ducat
think
so. Is married. Like Ducat, he said, and he sort of, kids too. He looks at, yeah. Which, you know, we never hear of them again.
Yeah, who is she? I'm judging her.
But I'm just abused by, like, he says you're married, and Ducat's like, what? Basically, like, why did you tell them?
I took my ring off. Jeez. Back me up. You're supposed to be my wingman.
I mean, irritatingly, Ducat ends up having a very decent plan at this point, which is basically like, do you remember those torture devices we kept under ops? Yeah. Why don't we use them? It's just like, did the Cardassians just build this station? It's basically like, you know that wall over there, Kira? Yeah. Are the torture spikes still behind it? Yes? The Cardassians built this station to kill people.
Yeah, clearly.
I think it was at this point I was distracted, because there was a point before this where Garrick's talking to Julian. And it's just like, why are you so happy about the fact that, you know, we're potentially about to die? He's like, you know, I'm happy because I'm with you, which is essentially what he says.
Yes.
I'm paraphrasing. And as soon as I saw that scene and like just took a little picture, posted on Twitter, I was distracted. Their love is real. And that's the true beauty. I think we should talk about if there's any relationship we're going to address, it's that one.
And yeah. Empty only Garashir.
Bashir was very flirty and very close, snuggling up to Garrick in that scene. I think he was like right behind him over his shoulder.
Yeah,
it was... he looked thrilled to see the love of his life living, you know, doing what he does best.
It was the puppy dog
hacking into computers.
It was beautiful.
You know, if my dad has this thing where he's like, you know, whenever we are anywhere, he's like, you know what, boys, to us three, this is a great place to take someone on a date. And I feel like, be like, at some point, my dad be like, point at that and be like, you know what, it's a great place to take someone on a date, kids. DS9 ops during a crisis. Great place for a date. Maybe not a first date. Third date. Take your significant other to DS9 to try and stop everyone getting nerve gassed.
You can really see what people are
made of. We're not even considering the other conspiracy theory. Garrick did this.
No, I don't think Garrick would do this.
He knew. He did this so he could secure a date with Julian. To test how he was under pressure. And, you know, see if this relationship was really going to work long term. Oh, gosh. I've solved it.
Isn't Mia all Garrick plots basically sitcoms if the crazy plans worked?
Yes.
That's his skill. That's a testament to him. I think I've solved it. I've solved it with love.
He might have solved. I mean, it doesn't. Ducat, it's irritating because Ducat's plan works, so Garrick doesn't get to be the hero. Sisko has to be the hero. And I mean, good for Sisko climbing through a green fire tunnel.
Oh yeah, the green fire tunnel.
Yeah, green fire tunnel is weird.
Why was there green fire? What was happening there?
I guess it's supposed to be a plasma fire.
Yeah, something blew out.
Just something I have to accept. Because I was like, was it explained? It doesn't matter.
It was they had to get an action scene at the end of Act 5. So we get, you know, peak train drama, which is Sisko swapping tubes out.
Dude, let's not overlook hero Jake. Jake has saved in this episode.
He saved Miles O'Brien from, I don't know, third-degree burns.
Getting choked by the gas. But what I love, there's a few things I love about this. Number one is Sisko always tends to drop the knowledge about something really obscure. Like, he always seems to, like, know how to do things. So you kind of get a hint that that he actually does do a lot of research and a lot of study about everything that's going on. So you never really see that in Deep Space Nine. In Voyager, you see Janeway study a lot, like so much that they do a lot of scenes where she's like up all night drinking coffee because she's been studying something. And you never see that with Sisko, but you do see the fruits of that, which is that he'll just drop knowledge about stuff all the time. And then secondly, this is the second time Sisko has left Miles for dead. The first time was in The Search when Miles O'Brien and Dax beam over to that little outpost thing. It's just like a little floating thing in space, and they go to download some stuff, and the Dominion or the Jem'Hadar show up. And the Dominion and the Defiant is still cloaked. So Sisko has to make a decision to uncloak and like fight their way out and save them or just leave them. And he decides to leave them. So second time he's
left. Well, Brian just never has a good dead. Time.
Like, sorry, dude. Mission comes first.
When Irish man dies.
So these traumatic things happen to him. Like maybe he's like, oh, if it was one or two, oh, that builds character. But it's every day, every week. It's destroying his character.
I mean, just thinking about the whole Sisko knowing thing, it's sort of, I think it's established in The Search, actually, that before he came to DS9, Sisko helped design ships.
Yeah.
Like, and I wish he'd put more emphasis on that, because that's like, because if he designed ships on Mars, he's going to know a fucking lot about how they work.
Yeah, right. And they never really utilize that in any of the shows where they're sort of picking apart how he's sort of this brilliant engineer, really, right?
Yeah. Well, that's the problem with episodic television, is that you, when you have a different person writing each episode, it's a bit hard to keep track of this shit.
That's true, yeah.
But yeah, action Sisko, and we keep forgetting about the Odo Quark.
The Quodo.
That is locked in a room being snarky to each other.
Yeah.
Gosh, there's got to be so much fan fiction. Just saying what really went down in that. I don't bring up fan fiction again.
I say that, but you must remember that the door to the security office is a window. It's two big windows, Olivia.
Oh,
so,
that won't let.
No, look, but there's everyone's rooms in the busy. Back. There's rooms in the back.
What, you're gonna let the local drunk watch your shack?
Everyone's busy, like trying to fight the impending apocalypse. They're not going to be wasting time.
Well, what I love about all those scenes is that everybody out on the promenade do not look panicked or anything. They're kind of just like casually walking around, like nothing's happening.
It sort of looked like, you know, 5 p.m. in a shopping center. It's like about to close. There's a few things you need to get. That was a level of intensity.
You're sort of power walking around.
Yeah.
Quark nattering on about his brother, who owns the moon, by the way, if you didn't know. No, it's his cousin who owns
his cousin. His cousin owns a small moon, just a modest living. I don't know what resources does a moon have.
He runs guns. He's a trade. Because we meet his cousin later on.
Yeah.
Okay.
But also, I mean, you do have a point, Livy, because the thing about owning a moon is you're not. What are you going to do with it? Because you can't. Do you rent it out to people?
It feels a bit like, you know, owning a boat. Isn't that just sort of a sunken cost?
Did Jay buy the moon in like a buy-to-let way? Like, did he buy the moon that he rents it out to other people? How do you own a moon? Or is it like a timeshare?
I think wouldn't it be similar to like owning an island or something? You own an island. So
yeah, but I can own an island if I wanted to. I mean, sure, it might be like it might just be like a rock off the coast of Ian Anglia, but technically I'd own an island.
Yeah, but then you got to think about, okay, so then you have to bring supplies to your island. You have to set up plumbing and heating,
okay,
and atmosphere.
Fire festival, but it's Fire Quark's festival, cousin. Yeah. I want that episode. That would be I demand hilarious. That episode.
That's a Lower Deck season 2 episode.
That absolutely needs to be canon.
This beautiful Quodo moment where Quark describes Odo as an honorable man, which I don't agree with.
Wait, you don't think Odo's an honorable man?
Odo is the equivalent of the Vichy French police force, okay? He may have been a good policeman, but he also worked for the Nazis.
Yeah,
this is
always a problem that I have, especially when it comes to the Odo Kira dynamic, because she very clearly like does not see him as ever been a collaborator. But by her own definition of a collaborator, when it comes to other people, is very clearly describing what Odo did.
I feel like Odo got a medal from the Bajorans, and then like 30 years later, he had the medal posthumously rescinded or something.
Right,
like,
right.
When the historiography made its cycle, Bajoran history is like, oh, fuck no, this guy was bad. They had to rescind his status as like honorary deputy prime minister or something.
It's so congratulatory to him, but it says your integrity is going to get us killed. Disagree so heavily, but sure.
I don't understand how Odo even got his job, because his first assignment he failed, which was to find the murderer of that shopkeeper, and he never found the murderer.
In fact, in the course,
dismissed a terrorist.
I like to think it's basically because no one else wanted the job.
That
seems like the kind of, I mean, that's in systems like that. That tends to be how people end up in positions like that. You end up in a position of power, a tenuous position of power, because no one else wants the job, because they don't want to get whacked. But
yeah, that's a good point. Good point.
Oh, nobody wants to whack Odo, because Odo has no vested interests or power. So that's probably why he hangs on for so long. Odo's a fascist.
he definitely likes things done in a very law-abiding way.
I mean, it feeds into the thing that my rant about Star Trek once in a while, which is that Star Trek's sort of ambivalent way it treats like the Klingons and the Dominion and the Romulans and the Cardassians and Odo means that we end up with these like, oh, is the Federation as bad as all of them? It's like, well, the Federation doesn't nerve gas people. It doesn't practice slavery. Its citizens get to vote on the leaders, and it isn't okay with its cops being fascists. Like, it's not great.
Some moral superiority there.
Like, fundamentally, people are like, oh, why is the Federation so morally superior? It doesn't nerve gas people. I think it has a right to be morally superior if it doesn't build star bases with inbuilt nerve gas. All right? That is justified. There's no moral ambiguity about not having nerve gas. You know, it's not like, oh, was the West as bad as the East of the Cold War? The Federation doesn't have nerve gas. The Cardassians do have nerve gas, and the Klingons use mind systems on the regular. There's no moral quandary about who's better.
There is a stark difference, and John loses his mind.
Like, it's not like the Federation, the sun shines out the Federation's ass, but like, democracy good, military dictatorship bad.
Well, it's the core of the basis of their beings when it comes to the Federation is about the betterment of humankind and gaining, yeah, and gaining knowledge for the better, for the personal development and the community development of human beings for the betterment. And then when you go to other alien species like the Klingons, their moral code runs through glory to your house and the empire, you know. Or if you go to the Cardassians, it's that nationalism idea. So everything for Cardassia as a whole, as a state. So whether or not you use nerve gas or not, I think it boils down to the threat of why you're using the nerve gas.
I mean, I suppose. Nerve gas. Yeah. Now we are having the moral question of when is it okay to use the nerve gas? When is it? Okay. If you
step into like,
if you are listening to this episode now,
good. Trident back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they have phasers, they have photon torpedoes, like those still, they still blow shit up.
I mean, there's a degree, yeah, there's a difference.
Not an individual.
There's a difference between arming your galaxy class starship with phasers and photon torpedoes and building a star base with inbuilt nerve gas.
For the citizens, right? Primarily. And not even the citizens, the people you've enslaved in labor camps.
Like, imagine if you got onto a plane and you were looking at like the switches and it's like, oh, what's that one for? Which one? Oh, the next to no smoking. Oh, that's if we're pumping nerve gas into the deck. And it's like, why would you want to do that? You know.
No, yeah. So there's no I think there's still like a line. You still have to like set up a line to cross whether or not whatever they're doing is morally good or morally just.
I do, just to circle back to this episode, not my rant. This is a very good episode at capturing the sort of banality of evil in Cardassia, that the concept of nerve gassing an entire station, then blowing it up, is just something that happens regularly enough that you build a computer program to deal with it.
This possibility I'm wondering about this like think tank. Like, who is this think tank that's sitting down and going, what are all the possibilities that could possibly happen?
Big nerve gas.
Oh dear.
Okay, so let's do some trivia. So this episode took a long time to get out. Ira Stephen Burr referred to it as one of those backbreaking, horrible, horrible experiences. Though he does acknowledge it was terrific at the end. But basically every single writer on the staff had a go at the script and they couldn't get it to work right up until the end. But Burr commented also on Ducat being more of a villain than he was on the Marquis part on the Marquis. Because he says here, and you like this, we were making him a little too friendly and we definitely did not want to do that. I don't want him to become the friendly neighborhood Cardassian.
Yeah. It's good to distinguish the fact that the fascist who ran labor camps is not a great guy.
Diplodocus.
You can't pop in like it's a sitcom and be like, hey guys, remember when I tried to massacre you?
Ducat beams in to Candlot to canned applause.
Like a sitcom, right?
Yeah.
So they needed a vehicle to show how douchey Ducat really is.
That makes it acceptable. I think it's acceptable. They needed everybody to know how vicious and horrible he was. You brought us up early, Olivia, about Ducat and Kira, which... So this is the first episode we see Ducat express a desire for Kira, some that will return in the fourth season episode Return to Grace, and in season six of Time to Stand. In this episode, however, his attempt to impress her is treated humorously, something which displeased Nana Visitor. According to Visitor, I would have liked my character to make the point that only a few years earlier, Ducat's wanting me would have meant that he could have had me, and I wouldn't have been able to do anything about it. So it shouldn't have been seen as a cute moment. It was actually a horrifying moment, one that should make Kira feel disgust and panic. To Kira, Ducat is Hitler. She is not going to ever get over that. She could never forgive him, and that is important to me. Kira may have started to see Cardassians as individuals, but she will always hate Ducat.
And rightly so. I would like to have been in the room where Nana, I think she was yelling at them for even trying to insinuate that, or well, make the storyline that Dukat and Kira would be together romantically, which is just, who does that? Who thinks of that?
Men.
Yeah. I don't know why though. Yeah, there's nothing even like hot about it or anything. Like, why even go there? Like, it's just
there was no reason. And then they do the mother thing, and there was at least that illustrates just, you know, the depth of depravity he is. But like, it didn't have to be someone related to Kira, did it?
But yeah, in subsequent episodes, Dukat's lobby for Kira would take on a much less humorous tone, which is good. It's good. We like to see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I always like them butting heads versus like any allusion to even friendship.
Versus unilateral flirting / harassment.
Yeah, it's... So, are we quitting?
Are we quitting Star Trek?
I won't quit. And the reason I won't quit is because of the look that Julian gives Garak. Final answer.
I think I'm staying just because this episode makes me continue to justify my take that the Federation is good, comma, actually. Because they don't build inbuilt nerve gas tanks.
That you know of.
It's not, if we don't know it, it's not canon.
Okay.
No, it's a good episode. People are going to be so upset about. I'm sure people have like skipped to the end to see what we say of this. This is like a beloved episode where we see our family. You know, in the early stages, we see how each of them contributes. You know, to Deep Space Nine. And I actually, when I was watching this, I was like, I think this is one that I could trick my family into watching. So like, it's a good introductory episode.
Dear.
So I respect the episode, so don't send me hate mail.
Send Olivia the hate mail, everyone. I'll forward it, don't worry. What about you, Rachel?
I do not, this is not the episode that makes me quit Star Trek, but it is the episode that makes me question these potholes that the writers sort of come up with. It has opened my eyes to, you know, this thing that people do in writing where it's just like, you just, the magic happens no matter what. Like, you don't need an explanation for why the magic is happening. It's just happening. Like, roll with it.
Yeah, it does do that. Yeah.
I mean, it does abruptly end with just Quark and Odo bickering. And then I didn't realize that it was going to end in that moment, but you see the camera panning away and it's like, wait, no, come back. We didn't get any resolve or explanation.
So what are we thinking on the Tripnip scale?
No. The answer is no for the Tripnip scale.
I'm going to give it 4 Tripnips.
No.
There's an additional optional 2 for the sheer fact that I had to know, consider that Garak and Dukat may have fucked.
Okay. I'm also giving it 6 Tripnips.
I'm so emotional. Also, I'm so sorry. Now I'm
disgusted for life.
You have to rate it now, Olivia.
I don't want to sully a beautiful episode of Deep Space Nine with trips nipples.
Then you could give it 0 Tripnips. But you can't, can you?
Well, give the episode. This is so emotional. This is just like, I feel like my soul is being broken down. Fine. Like, it's getting 0. It's getting 0 Tripnips, okay? No, I won't do it.
Okay. All right. Well, that is that torture over. I feel bad, honestly. You know, if you listeners would like me to stop torturing Olivia like this, do let us know.
You know what this reminded me of? The jelly deals. The jelly deal.
Yes, the jelly deal.
I have to actually mention it because
you need to eat.
Think I'm avoiding it, and we actually just forgot, and I can't not address it at this point.
They're also actually rather hard to get a hand on.
Yeah. So, John, where are you getting your eels from?
I don't have an eel dealer in it. You don't have not on me. It's not on me.
Well, there used to be jellied eels on Deliveroo for me, and they're gone. That's generally a fact that's happened. So I'm sure
Terry knows. Terry must know. Terry, if you're listening, please let us know where we can find jellied eels.
Gosh. They're all in like Tesco, right? Like in the fish section?
I will walk down to my local supermarché tomorrow and search for jellied eels.
I've never had jellied eels. Just like describe, like do they come in a jar? Is it a can?
They can come in a tub usually.
A tub?
Yeah, a tub with a little carton.
It's like a little carton with eels in gelatin.
In clear gelatin. Also, we should make, like, people maybe don't know the torture that you have been inflicting on me. Basically, because John reached 1,000 followers, woo! I have to eat the eels. That's the crux of the issue.
That's it.
Okay, and it's so been like not... weeks. It's been maybe, how long has it been? Weeks,
it's been month? Like a month at this point.
So well, this is not something you regularly eat.
Oh, God, no.
I've never had it before. Can I make that very clear? Why would I have sought out gelatin seafood? It's a British delicacy. It truly is like a British like traditional food. So you will get out those sorts of...
Well, it's a traditional London food.
Okay. London. Yeah. My family's British, but not London. So yeah.
So they have some sense.
So we do have like Marmite sandwiches. That's, I think, the most British thing.
I'm just saluted to Marmite, and I'm about to leave the call for that. Isn't Marmite so, Australian?
That's Vegemite.
Maybe.
Heavens.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Salty yeast paste. Yum.
Oh, gosh, that's a chaotic conclusion, but
yeah,
make it work.
So yeah, we're not quitting. It got a low tripnip count because Olivia refused to take part.
I gave it 0, signifying how much I respect the episode.
Sure. So, Rachel, you got anything to plug? Where can people find you? What do you do?
Oh, yeah, I got a new podcast coming out called The Cosmic Inn. So you can check us out at cosmicinn.ca. And we talk about life, the universe, and Star Trek in all its infinite diversity and infinite combinations.
Exciting. And if you have any queries for us, you can follow us at Quit Star Trek Pod or email us at quitstartrekpod@gmail.com. I think that's the email address, right? If it's wrong, whoops. And that's us for this week. I've been John.
I've been Olivia.
And I'm Rachel.
And we'll see you all next time.